We'll edit, so if something does pop in,
yeah,
it's not a big deal.
We'll do that, and we can re-answer whatever, I understand, so.
So I guess let's start with the history here.
The Lakewood's history?
Yeah, give me the background. Like,
okay.
This is, what generation are you?
I'm the fourth generation. Our family owners, we've gone through a couple different namesakes, but it was my great-grandmother that started the resort. She worked for a guy that owned an island here on the lake. And she did housekeeping for him, took care of all the services around his place. And he happened to own Lakewood's at the time, too. And after a couple of years, it's just a small little island, he's like, Anna, I want you to go back to Lakewood's, and you can take care of my guests there. When I want them to come out and visit me, I'll call on you, and you can, get somebody to row them out to the island, and we'll entertain them out there, and then they can come back, and they can stay with you at Lakewood's. And after about a year of that, she's like, well, this is silly to be doing it just for your guests. We should open it to the public. And so in 1907, she started renting to the public. And through the years, she took over as a land contract and bought the resort from the judge. So that's how it all started, back there. And we're working. It's going to be 120 years here.
So that would be
pretty soon.
Great-grandma Anna?
That was my great-grandma Anna, yes. And she eventually married the engineer on the train. And so she went from Anna Nemec to Anna Young. And then their daughter, my grandmother, ended up taking over and running the resort and married a Rasmussen. And so my father was the first Rasmussen that actually carried through with the name. Otherwise, it was changing every generation. And so I'm the second one that carried it through. So
it's a great entrepreneurial story of how this started.
Sure, absolutely. Yeah, at that time, you think a single lady, she started working for the judge. I think she was 14 or 15 years old. Did that for, several years, and, probably by the time she was 18 years old, she was, running Lakewood's as a single lady, her and her sister, who was a couple years younger.
So we're talking about an era in which people would come up for longer than a brief weekend.
Sure, absolutely, yes.
So what was the draw for people to come up here?
Well, at that time, it was, it was a hunting and fishing camp. People came up, and they came up, and they hunted in the fall, they fished. And then I'm not sure what they did in the winter. Maybe skied around or something, hid from the snow. But I think a lot of people, what they were doing is they were escaping the cities, kind of like what they do now. They want to get out of here and get into what we all have up in this area. But they used to do it mainly probably from the heat. If you can imagine living in Chicago when there were all the horses and, the toilets ran in the streets, what that place would smell like. Even worse than it does today. No offense to Chicagoans anywhere. So, but it was just a great place for them to come. They could get away from the heat. They could get away from things. We got Lake Superior just north of us. Big natural air conditioner, and it was just a good place for them to go. They come up here. They could fish, enjoy the woods, get out into the forest, and everything else. Kind of what everybody does today.
Mm-hmm. So over the generations, was there a gradual expansion of what Lakewood's Resort offered?
I'm not sure that it was. I mean, there was always that bent on, getting people out to what the area has to offer. I mean, that's really why it is a destination like it is. And, I think that kind of held true, and that was one of the reasons why my great-grandfather, when was approached by the, at that time it probably was the Park Service, that they wanted to create a national forest here. And he's like, well, sure, my guests can always use the national forest and everything else. And he, ended up selling thousands of acres, to help create the national forest for, I remember it was a nickel or a dime or whatever it was. It was, very little money at the time, to create what we have, help create what we have up here. Mm-hmm. And so I think that was always part of what, we were as Lakewood's, is getting people up here for what the area has to offer.
So I guess kind of the history lesson, when did the getting away for the hunting and fishing shift into a family getaway? Or was that always an element?
I think that was always an element. Even I know my parents or my father, when he grew up here at the resort too, you know, they always had their guests. And at that time, like I said, a lot of them would come and they'd just stay for the summer. And then maybe they were school teachers or other people that were retiring, you know, kind of like what they do now to come up here. But rather than having their own place, they would come and see a place like this. And a lot of it was American planned, so they could either come and stay just, you know, for the room, or they could come and they'd have the meals planned and everything else. And we even have some of our cabins and stuff that are still named after, you know, some of our guests, like our Magic House. There was a guy that would stay there all summer, and he used to do, you know, magic tricks for all the other people at the resort. And so we still have the Magic House on the property and other ones. So just a really interesting way of doing that, where, you know, these people are long friends. We have people that have been coming for, even now, there's families that have been coming over 75 years that have been staying with us. So it's really neat.
And you were born into this.
I was born into this, yes.
So the day you came home from the hospital, did they put you on the bar, or did they have you sleep in?
No, there's some interesting stories, though. I remember at that time, a lot of times we would go out to, you know, the trade shows and stuff, and through all the different cities, and we'd sign people up to stay for the summer. That's how people found out where to go. They would come, they would see a brochure, talk with some of the people, and then they're like, well, that sounds like a great place to stay. And I got stories when I was a baby, they used to tuck me underneath the trade show booth, and I'd sleep down there while they were doing this. So I grew up doing a lot of the things. Stories of being on the counter back in the kitchen when they're helping with the meals and stuff on a busy weekend or something. So
was this growing up, I mean, could you imagine a different life, or has this just always been who you were?
I think it's always been part of who I was. I mean, it was great. You know, we had, you know, for being a small community, small town and stuff, I got to expose to a lot of different things. You know, we had different people coming up here every weekend. You know, all the kids and people and families and stuff that are here having fun, and a lot of them are, you know, some of my closest friends still today that were just guests here at the resort. And that really makes for, you know, an interesting, you know, way to grow up. I mean, it's fun. I mean, a lot of work, a lot of stuff to do around here, but, you know, you hire your friends to come and help you bag ice, you know, when you're a kid, you know, to do things. And they thought it was fun. And I remember stories of my dad and his, you know, brothers and sisters. They used to go on the trash run, and they'd go around all the cabins and picking up the trash, and all the kids would come out, and they'd all ride on the garbage truck as they went and picked up the trash to bring it to the dump. I mean, it was, you know, those stories didn't start with me. They started, you know, way back before, and I'm sure it went on, you know, with my great-grandparents' kids.
Mm-hmm. So part of our story is obviously focusing on wall, right? And this has been known as a good wall, right? That
dedication
is not recent, or that's longstanding.
No, it's been a walleye lake as long as we recall. And it's funny, we had somebody that did some research way back, and he was thinking, he's like, you know, I'm not sure that Nemecagon was always a walleye lake. It might have been more, you know, this or that or other things, and they were planted back in the late 1800s or whatever it might have been, and then they kind of thrived in the area. Not that there weren't walleye, of course, all through this area, but it was an interesting thing that he had come up with, and I'm not sure where it is, and I don't know if there's any truth to it, but as long as there's been any recorded history that we know of, this has been a walleye lake. It's been a great sport fishing lake for everything. The you know, the Native Americans had their villages on here. And, you know, they fished and, you know, and traveled through this area, you know, all the time. And that's what we know, I guess.
Mm-hmm. So there was a point in time back in the early 90s when the DNR did some surveys here, Glyphrate did surveys, and it had 9 walleye per, adult walleye per acre.
Yep.
And that's 3 times what the state average is right now. So that is
sure.
Walleye fishery.
Yes, absolutely. Yeah, and it was. There was, I remember that, you know, when I was a kid, and there were a lot. And this got, you know, a lot of natural reproduction in there. It's got great, you know, shorelines and stuff, the rocky bottoms and other things to help make those fish thrive in this lake. And I think that's, you know, there it does receive that attention, so it might receive more pressure and other things for people to come up and fish on it.
Did you fish when you were a kid? Did you have time?
I did. We did a fair amount of fishing. It seemed like, you know, it was hard to to do here, because you know that the work is always right there in the background for you. So we used to escape away too and get to other places and, you know, fish some of the other lakes, you know. My grandfather, you know, loved to fish too, so we'd go out with him, my father and my brother and sister and stuff. We'd go different places, go to Canada, go down to the Chippewa flowage up here. I mean, this area, you know, the Hayward Lakes area is, you know, it's got tons of fisheries, so, and good fishing in all of them, really.
Mm-hmm. So you were obviously here when the tribes first started reasserting their spearing rights.
Yes, I was. I remember it. I was a teenager at the time, and of course there was a lot of turmoil in the area that received national attention with the protests and other things as that was happening. And, you know, there's, I guess you can always look at things. You can look at the negative aspect and you can always look at the positives and try to do that. And I know that was one thing that my father really tried to do is, you know, he saw the potential impact and what was going on and tried to come up with ways of helping solve the problems that were coming up with those changes.
So your mother was making reference to this before when he said that Phil, your father, like, was on a council back then, and
they yes.
to try and like start looking at possible solutions. What can be done?
Yeah, in fact, that was one of the things right away that he did is he got involved and contacted with the different tribal leaders and stuff in the area, and came up with an idea for this Fish for the Future. And he didn't do it alone. There was a lot of other people that were involved with it too, but they were all proactive and thinking, hey, there's got to be some solutions to these problems. And you know, they tried a bunch of different things and did some other things to help, you know, make sure that the lake maintained its, you know, status as being a great walleye fishery and really fishery for all the different game fish.
Mm-hmm. And what is the significance of walleye? What did it mean when they started to decline?
Yeah, you know, I think that's you know, it's the iconic fish, that and the muskie. You know, obviously people think of the Northwoods, you know, and they think of fishing up here. They think of walleye, they think of muskie. And, you know, being that both of them are in this lake, you know, to have one starting to lose prominence or something like that really did affect people. Because, I mean, they came up here, and a lot of our guests through the years, that was the thing. You know, they wanted to go out there. They wanted to catch their, you know, their dinner for the frying pan. And, you know, muskie isn't one of those fish. So what is it? Well, it's the walleye. And so the people that would come up here, you know, they wanted to, you know, do that. We have cooking in our units and stuff up here, and they wanna do their own little fish fry, or they come into the restaurant here and enjoy our fish fry that we serve them here too.
I mean, was there a real threat that, I mean, that could change the economy of the area if that fishing, even if it wasn't the main driver, was enough of an element of that?
Oh, absolutely. And in fact, I think we did see it. And you know, there were, again, some, you know, negative aspects of you know, early on that started to take prominence. And you know, it started, you know, probably, you know, in the 90s, mid 90s, and that, where, you know, the initial impetus for everybody working to make solve problems because of that, it kind of went away for a lot of them. It's still the problems, you know, that came from that, the type of fishing, the pressure that was still on the fish and other ones, they started developing later. You know, like you said, 90s, you know, they were, you know, all these fish that are like three times the national, or excuse me, the state average. But yet at the end and into 2000, I don't remember when all the censuses were, all of a sudden we're like, you know, there's only one fish you can catch. You know, we went from having five fish to three fish, and all of a sudden they're saying, you know, there's one fish and it's got to be a slot, or, you know, even to the point they were talking that maybe you're not going to be able to keep any of the fish while the fishery recovers. And all of a sudden, boom, the prominence comes back, that interest comes back from the public and the community and stuff, to like, hey, we really got to do something to improve this fishery.
It was around 2017 that some of those surveys showed the absolute crash to below state average.
Sure.
And you know, we've talked with Mike DeAndre, we've talked with Redcliffe and, you know, UW Superior, Stevens Point and their Aquaculture
yes.
Center. How, what was the that those first conversations like getting people back together, like, hey, you can still find a solution and do something?
Sure. Well, I think they went back and re-examined some of the programs that they had that they started back in the 80s, you know, the late 80s and that, you know, where we worked with the tribes that were coming out and exercising their rights out here to, you know, milk the sperm, get the eggs, raise the fry, or even just I mean, even early on, they were just like, you know, let's fertilize those eggs and let's just put them back in the water and keep that going. And, you know, they took it even one step further now, working with the tribes up at Red Cliff there, where they have the fishery up there that they're raising them, where we're raising 9-inch fish and putting them back in the lake. And we're talking tens of thousands of fish that we put back into the lake here. And, you know, we're starting to see those results. We had guests here that are out fishing, and they're saying, you know, geez, I went out and caught 30 fish today. You know, I mean, I haven't caught fish like that since I, you know, went, you know, to some other prominent place, maybe in Canada or some of those waters where there's, you know, they have a really significant population of walleye. They're like, I haven't caught fish like that here for a long time. You know, maybe they weren't all giant trophies, but you know what? Catching fish is catching fish, and it's a lot of fun. So, and that's really what we want to do, is people to go out there. I don't think, you know, people really want to take home all these baskets of fish maybe like they wanted to at one time or another. And, you know, a lot of people don't want to, you know, clean a stinky old fish in their place anyways and try to cook it on the stove. You know, I don't need to do that. I can go to a great restaurant that are all through the area, like here at Lakewoods, and get my walleye dinner there. And, you know, somebody's going to do it expertly prepared for me rather than, you know, something that I cook once a year when I go on vacation. Mm-hmm. So.
And that is a difference between now and, you know,
yes,
20, 30 years ago, is that why people fish and what enjoyment they take from it. It's not as focused on the harvest. It's more of the catch. And if you put it back, I mean,
absolutely.
But just the idea of catch and release.
Yep, that catch and release has been popular. And it's done a lot to improve the fishing up here. I mean, look what it did for the muskie when people quit harvesting the muskie and just putting them all back in. You know, take a picture of it, get a reproduction done, put that on the wall instead of, you know, taking that fish out of the water. And you know, it's done a lot through the whole area for improving the muskie fishery. And now this is your place. If you want to catch a trophy fish, you want to come out here, because that 40 plus inch muskie, your chances here are probably better than just about anywhere to catch that.
So looking at the history of how your resort has evolved as well, just some of the improvements you've done, adding a golf course, some of those other elements, is it a coincidence that you started adding more amenities around the time that the walleye started their decline?
You know, I think that was part of it. You know, I don't know if this came up before in your talks with anybody else, but, you know, the prominence of that fishing opener. You know, I remember when I was a kid and I was growing up, even in, you know, into the 20s, you know, into my 20s, I should say, that, you know, I mean, there was like a week-long festival. I mean, it was wild up here. And, you know, people are coming and there's a lot of excitement and stuff in the air. And, you know, people can't wait and the boats are lined up and they're coming in and they're telling stories and the bars and the restaurants and everything is fun. The whole area is buzzing at fishing opener every year. And then, you know, like I said, sometime in the 2000s, maybe, you know, it's just started. It seemed like every week it was, or every year it was going down a little bit more, a little bit more, a little bit more for the number of people that were coming up. And really the last, you know, maybe like you said, I mean, it was before 2017. It just almost was like a non-event, and there weren't a lot of people that were coming up here anymore for it. And I think, you know, there's a lot of different reasons for that. You know, one, you know, while I've been planted throughout the state now, and people can go, you know, near their homes, they didn't have to drive all the way to the far northern reaches of the state to catch a walleye. They can catch some down in their different areas and, you know, throughout all of Wisconsin. So I think that, you know, affected, you know, a lot of the people having to drive so far up here. But then too, like you said, maybe, you know, all of a sudden you can't catch it. All of a sudden you went from five fish to one fish or two fish, and one can be over and one can be under and all that. And people are just like, you know, it's just not as much fun. Or maybe there's a negative connotation that's added to that for in people's heads, that, you know, they look at walleye as, you know, that's that fish I want to catch and I want to bring home, I want to harvest it and keep, you know, and all of a sudden they say, well, we can't. So I think that affected a lot of it. And now that, you know, maybe some of that stuff has changed, people aren't really harvesting as much as they are, just want to go out and catch that, we're going to see some resurgence in there, especially if they can come out and they hear like, geez, I can catch 10, 15, 20 fish in a day up here because the fishing is so good. Even, you know, even if they're not taking them out of the water, all of a sudden that excitement is there, and we'll see more fishermen again.
So looking on your website, just how you brand yourself, and you talked about when you were a kid underneath the table, people.
Yeah.
at one point, this was probably advertised as a walleye resort or as a place to come fish in a great walleye fishery.
Sure.
And that branding isn't really as prominent. And it's a great relaxation. It's a family resort. It's a a wonderful place to spend your time. And just like who you're calling to, it seems to have shifted over time.
Yeah, you know, I think that's part of it. And I think our changes as a resort and who and our market and stuff has changed a lot with, you know, the family values and stuff that we see in the state where, you know, maybe like the kids' parents today, maybe they did some stuff with their grandparents and did a little fishing, but it wasn't such a big part of why they were going and doing things. And all of a sudden, and that just didn't carry on to their kids. And so, you know, fishing is part of that family culture has changed a lot for people. And so it's not as important a part of their vacation plans and other things. There's still some, you know, there's still a lot of families that are. I mean, we just had a longtime guest comes up musky fishing all the time, came up with his grandparent or his grandfather, comes up with his father. He's lamenting because he's got to leave on Wednesday this week because work came up. And, you know, he's been coming up since, I remember him just being a little kid coming up here. And he's like, yeah, I'm going to have to leave early because I can't do it. But, you know, obviously that family, it's really important for them. But a lot of the families now, it's fun. We'll go out and do it, but it's not a big part of their vacation experience.
Yeah, we were out on the lake for a few hours when we were here last time, and just looking out the windows now. I mean, you see the tubes, the skiers, the jet skis, you've got the big slide. I mean, it's fun. It's action. It's not patience and let's see if we get a bite today.
Yeah, and it depends on the time of the day. Like, you know, this morning I remember I got up. I don't know why I get up at the sunrise. I shouldn't have, but the dogs have to get let out too. And I'm sitting out on the deck and I'm out there and I see the boats that are out there. And, you know, there's several of them parked around the different parts of the lake. And I know they're out fishing. They're catching that first light fish. They're getting out there enjoying, you know, their pastime before everybody else is waking up and all those other activities start. And you'll see the same thing here this afternoon and this evening tonight. You know, some of those activities die down and all of the fishermen will come out and you'll see the lake covered with boats again as people are fishing and catching that last light fish and that usually when the strong bite is coming on. So.
And it's almost like they've learned to share the lake.
No, they really have. You know, our lakes associations have done a lot to help with that. You know, protecting things. I know there's different, you know, policies and actions and stuff that they do throughout the state for, you know, this time is allocated for this activity, this time's allocated for that. And, you know, fortunately, we don't have to worry about that up here, you know, as of yet. Not to say that we might not in the future, but, you know, people do, and they're accustomed to that. They know everybody has their pastime. They like to do things, and there's a lot of room out there. You know, we got 3,300 plus acres of lake out there for people to enjoy, and they can absolutely do that.
So what is it about catching a walleye that makes it so much more different than any other type of fish?
I think it is, you know, like you said, you're sitting there and you hear the stories of grandpa and him going out and catching a stringer of fish, and you know, like I said, you talk to anybody that comes to the North, they think walleye fish fry. They think about that, you know, they think about, you know, the Wisconsin classic fish fry and doing these things. And it's just part of the culture of Wisconsin. And walleye is still that Northwoods fish. You know, they think about it in Canada. They think about it here in northern Wisconsin. And, you know, even though you can catch it anywhere in the state, northern Wisconsin is still known as the walleye place in the state.
So talking about walleye, you serve walleye.
Absolutely.
How much of that is like a key element? Because there's a lot of places that still have a fish fry.
Sure.
It's harder and harder to find a walleye fish fry.
Yeah, well, we have a walleye fish fry every day. You can catch, in fact, we serve it for breakfast, we serve it for lunch, and we serve it for dinner. So the walleye fish fry is absolutely a part of what Lakewoods is. We have, for breakfast, we have our, you know, walleye breakfast comes with eggs and hash browns and all the rest. We got a walleye sandwich we serve the rest of the day. You know, a nice big walleye fillet that's on there. We hand bread it, put it on there. And then at night we have, and of course, there's always that Friday fish fry too. And we serve a couple different kinds of fish, but crusted walleye is one of them that we have on there. We still have our walleye fry that we do. And it's all of it. It's part of our menu. And I talk to all of our purveyors every year. We go through a lot of effort to make sure that, you know, hey, you know, we can still get the larger size fillets and stuff that people dream about catching when they're out there themselves, to make sure we have them on the menu so they can see that. So
do you think people would be surprised to learn that a lot of that walleye comes from Canada? Because that's the only available catch.
Well, that's not the only. I know Lake Erie has a lot, and there's Leech Lake up in northern Minnesota and stuff, where they still do some commercial fishing for walleye. But, you know, really Canada is where it's at. They, you know, the different, I know the tribes up there, Aborigines that they have up in Canada, they do fish a lot of those lakes, and that's where a lot of it comes from. And, you know, that's a lot of where we get it too. And that's, I don't know, it's not a bad thing. I mean, they're, you know, we can still get the fish. They got the natural reproduction, and they don't have the pressure that they have, you know, maybe down here in the States and stuff, that allows that those fish populations are there for you to, you know, to utilize them.
Well, and that's why we can still have a walleye dinner, because if there was commercial pressure on Wisconsin's walleye fisheries, then that would be truly unsustainable.
Yeah, absolutely. There wouldn't be walleye fishing, you know, probably anywhere up there if it's like that.
Yeah. So walk me through a little bit of, like, what we're going to see tonight in the kitchen. And so you said you, like, shop for the year for your walleye? Like, you're already planning out?
Absolutely. So every spring and every fall, I meet with my purveyors, and we work out pricing and quantities and stuff like that to make sure that we'll have the stuff on hand, or the fish on hand. And then we also, you know, we plan that for our, you know, our meetings and events and groups and things. Is that something we want to offer to our groups and other ones or not, based on the availability and what they think they can get for us. So you know, we got to look at it as a sustainable thing as well. And if, you know, they're saying, well, the harvests are down this year and everything else, well, you know, maybe we'll take the pressure off of some things, but to make sure that it's still available for those people that are coming up here to visit, that we have that.
I mean, I'm sure you have guests that, like, part of, like, they come up here for a lot of things, but, like, getting a walleye dinner.
Absolutely. I remember, it was a number of years ago now, that, you know, they were having problems with the harvest, and they weren't getting the size fish that they wanted. That we could get in here, and I, God forbid, put a smaller fillet on the menu, and, you know, you would think that I was eating right off their plates, you know, that, you know, the response we got, and they're like, well, what happened to this? And I said, you know, we had to explain it. We had to put a thing on our menu, you know, to kind of let them know that, hey, they didn't get the, you know, the larger fish, and, you know, in terms of sustainability and other things, we're making adjustments to our menu to make sure that we can continue to have walleye in the future. And fortunately, that changed. It was only a short 1 year, you know, occurrence, and we were able to go back to get the larger size that we enjoy having, and it's been that way since. So
it's interesting, because obviously we're working with UW Stevens Point and their aquaculture center. They're part of this experiment. There is a gentleman down in Rice Lake who has an aquaculture center that uses walleye in his tanks to feed his plants, and they're looking at what would it take to expand that out, and, like, one day there might be a commercial fishery for walleye in Wisconsin. I mean, how different would it feel if you were like, this is Wisconsin walleye?
No, it's Wisconsin walleye. Yeah, you know, fortunately we get an opportunity for Wisconsin walleye, because we can go catch them in the lake, but, you know, to offer that to our guests and give them that true Wisconsin experience, that would be, it'd be tremendous. It'd be wonderful. I could take Canadian off the menu and put, you know, Wisconsin walleye on the menu instead of Canadian walleye. So I'd really enjoy that. So I look forward to that, hopefully coming up in the future.
When part of the story is, we've looked at all the different research programs that the DNR and Glyphwick and universities and all these different agencies are putting so much effort into studying population decline and climate impacts and lakes and harvests. There's a lot of money that goes into this one species. And there's a question to be asked of, like, is it worth all the attention and all the money that it's getting to make sure that there are walleyes for the future, that there are going to be walleye opportunities for future anglers and little kids going up in Cranbrook?
I really do. I think it's worth, you know, every effort, because, again, if you think of, you know, the Wisconsin culture, you think about what really defines people when they think about the state and they think about vacationing in the Northwoods and other ones, it comes up. And I know that the Department of Tourism here in Wisconsin has done different studies, and they've done different things through the years, and it does. It comes up time after time after time, and it really does help define us. And so to take that effort, you know, to sustain that or to keep that around, I think really is important. And it would be, if that was lost somehow, I really think it would be, we wouldn't be as well off because of that.
And a crappie fish fry just doesn't have the same ring.
It doesn't have the same ring, but you know, there's nothing wrong with a crappie fish fry. I tell you what, those are some of the tastiest too. So, but that's really what's great about the fisheries up here. You know, you can get all the different fish, and you know, you can go out and you can try to catch your walleye. Maybe you'll catch some, maybe you'll keep them, maybe you won't. But a lot of times people will say, you know what, I'd just rather have a pan fish fry and go out there and catch those. I know I'm going to get them. I know I can plan for it, rather than waiting till you get enough. Or if you're, you know, feeding your family or something like that, and you can only catch one or two fish. Well, that's not enough to feed a whole family when you go out for fishing, but you can catch enough of the pan fish, crappie, or something else that you know you can feed your family if that's what your plan is to have a fish fry. So you can do that right out here, and it makes it a great place to come. So,
anything else that you want to add along these lines?
You know, I don't know that there was a whole lot more. I don't think we kind of touched on some of the history stuff, a little bit of the fish for the future.
Before we let you go off,
some great pictures. I mean, you got some of the pictures of stuff.
Kind of walk us through. We'll go out there and just have you kind of point out some of the
waves.
But before we wrap this up, can I get you to say and spell your name just so I have it correct on my table?
Sure. I'm a Philip Charles Rasmussen instead of the Philip August that you've met before. So I'm also a Phil. But I go by PC, and then Rasmussen, RASMUSSEN.
All right. And title here?
I'm owner, general manager.
All right. Great. Thank you so much.
You bet.
That was great.